Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
As a leader and in business, there's always going to be gaps between what is and what I'm trying to accomplish, what my financial goals are, my leadership goals, maybe even my goals around my own well-being. So it's interesting to not shy away from seeing those gaps between what actually is now and what we're trying to accomplish. And there's some discomfort.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I am delighted to bring you our guest today. Mark Lesser is someone I know you're going to enjoy hearing from. I have gotten so much out of his book, and it's one of those that I tell you right now, we're not even going to scratch the surface. Well, we'll scratch the surface, but that's about all that we're going to get. But you're going to get so much value from that, I already know. So before I introduce Mark, I want to remind you listeners, if you are interested in joining, getting that that personal time in a small group with me, send me that email, david.dye@letsgrowleaders.com, and I'll get you more information about that in some future episodes. All right, let's hear from Mark. Mark is a CEO, executive coach, and Zen teacher with more than 25 years of experience supporting leaders in reaching their full potential in business and in life. And prior to his business and coaching career, Mark was a resident of the San Francisco Zen Center for 10 years and director of the Tassajara Zen Mountain Center, the first Zen monastery in the Western world. And I got to say, Mark, you are the first Zen teacher that we have had on the show in 200 and plus some episodes. So I'm so glad you're here. Mark also leads the weekly meditation group Mill Valley Zen, which is focused on Zen teaching and practice. And Mark's done so many things. He's helped develop the world-renowned Search Inside Yourself program within Google, which is a mindfulness-based emotional intelligence training for leaders. And he's the author of the book that I mentioned earlier, Finding Clarity: How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. So listeners, I know you know why we have Mark on the show. Clarity and compassionate accountability, topics we talk about regularly, and here we have them combined. Mark, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And as I was taking in, you know, my bio, I thought, I'm actually a real business guy too. And I've started and been CEO of a couple different companies. And I feel like I've got the scars to prove it. You know, I started and grew a publishing company and ran it for 15 years. Mm. And that was coming right out of my 10 years at the Zen Center. And that was, I learned so much by being in that CEO seat. So I have tremendous respect for what it takes, especially to start and grow a company, but working in, you know, leadership is a beautiful, humbling, fantastic opportunity in so many ways.
Boy, that it is, and such a path to our growth as human beings if we'll take that road. you know, and you have certainly done work with a number of different organizations and leaders. In addition to all of your own business leadership, then you've also helped leaders in organizations of all shapes and sizes and many names everyone would recognize. But before all of that, before Zen, before all of it, I'd like you to take us back, if you would, to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader and what that might have looked like for you.
Well, it's funny that I was really young when I was surprised that I was drawn to reading the business section of the newspaper. I worked as a kid, door to door selling seeds, as I remember, in my suburban neighborhood in New Jersey. I learned a lot about resilience working as a golf caddy on a couple different courses. And then a little known fact about my life is that I got early admittance to Rutgers University. And when I told my parents that, they responded with, "Congratulations, but how are you planning to pay for it? We don't have any money." So I learned a lot about resilience. I ended up getting a full caddy scholarship to Rutgers University.
Oh, my.
And also, I'll just say one other thing about an answer to your question. One of my earliest jobs was working in a hospital laundry room in New Jersey with a group of, I was 20 years old, and there were all these older European, mostly Polish women that I was working with. And it was my first experience of culture change. I completely, with my playfulness and my attitude, I just completely transformed the culture of that workplace, and we had a lot of fun. It was kind of morbid. We turned it into a fun and playful. And in fact, I remember the boss there was a little not happy with that we were singing and playing while we were doing the laundry.
And why not?
Exactly.
Why not? The laundry's getting done, and maybe more effectively at that. So
yes, so yes, many many early lessons in, I think, hard work, resilience, and culture change.
Fantastic. All right. Well, and that's a great great way to get to know you just a little bit more as we dive into this book. And again, the name of the book is Finding Clarity: How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. And our guest today is Mark Lesser. And listeners, I got to tell you, many times you see a book, and so often books will have an introduction, and many, not all, but many of those introductions, you can read it, not read it. Hey, you do not want to skip the introduction to Mark's book. It is, I would go so far as to say, probably one of the top five introductions I have read in any book of this genre. And it is rich. There's so much in there, and we're going to do our best not to stay in the introduction the whole show, but there is just so much here. So, powerful introduction. I encourage you, listeners, don't skip this one. You're going to want to read it.
Well, say more. I'm really curious. What was it that grabbed you about the introduction?
All right. Well, there's several things. So let's, and some good ways to introduce and get into the topic here too. So, so obviously, when we're talking about something like clarity, finding clarity, and then a compassionate accountability, we need to know what we're talking about. So in the introduction, you start by saying clarity begins with acknowledging and embodying that the world isn't always what it seems. And you use a tree as an example, and I love the metaphor. So let's start with clarity, because we do talk about clarity quite a bit on the show. And with you and your client, you have a particular definition. So what does clarity mean for you, Mark?
Yeah, I think I use the example of a tree, in that we tend to, like, I'm sitting right now, I'm looking at some trees. There's a few different pine trees and some other kinds of trees right outside my window. And but if we stop just for a moment and open up the apertures of our senses, trees are amazing, right? We should all be amazed by trees. We should all be amazed, by our breath and our bodies and being alive. So to me, clarity is seeing from many different, seeing and feeling and living from many different perspectives, not just the surface perspective, but the perspective of the mystery, the sacredness, the things that we can't possibly know. And to me, that's super interesting and actually important as leaders, to be able, again, to be really good at the numbers and the spreadsheets, and to be clear about, you know, our marketing strategies, but at the same time to see our own humanness and the amazing humanity that is everywhere. So that's, I kind of define clarity as, in a way, seeing from many different perspectives, even embracing mystery, embracing paradox, right? That we all want clarity, but we tend, I think, to there's a human tendency to narrow our focus as opposed to widen. So how can we find clarity in both the narrow and the wide, you know, the surface and the deep?
So I want to camp out there for just a second, because I think this is it's philosophical, but I think it's so important to how we approach these things. So in that metaphor of the tree, right? So you've got this continuum of ways. There's this physical solid in the trees outside my window, green object. And then there's the biological construction, its cells and xylem and phloem and all those things we know. And then there's the mystery and awe and wonder. And those are just three facets. We could certainly come up with, if we took more time, many more. There's an extent to which when I think about clarity and I try to take that to the workplace or to my team or to the results that we're trying to achieve, and there's the mystery and wonder and awe of every human being that's on my team. And what does that even mean? You know, it's that there's this, that paradox, maybe, if you will, of this like physical concrete person, thing, work in front of me, and then the wonder and awe and all of the things in between. For me, that starts to feel like, whoa, how do I hold all of that? How do I deal with all of that? And for leaders who are maybe listening right now going, gosh, that seems like the opposite of clarity to me. And how do we start to embody, to use your word, hold all of that in ourselves as we're approaching our work?
Mm-hmm. You know, what comes up for me is the practice of just being able to listen, right? So, you know, I can, right, one can get lost, right, in all of these, you know, highfalutin philosophical ideas. But really, if I just come back and here I am, I'm just listening, just to listen to you right now, just to stay with what you're saying, not to get lost in my own, you know, listening means, in a way, not being lost in my own thoughts, but kind of training and experience in letting go and really just taking in, oh, what are you saying? What am I perceiving and feeling as I'm taking in what you're saying? And it's interesting, right? The skills that we don't talk so much about as leaders or even as humans, right? Listening, to be able to focus, and at the same time to be able to open, right? Focusing and opening. And we do, you know, we don't have to talk about them much because we all do it without any training. It's amazing, right? And we all have these mirror neurons in us that we can actually feel the feelings of others. So I think in some way it's, you know, training ourselves to become more comfortable in this mix of focus and openness, of to become comfortable in this, you know, we have to, you know, this world of where we have to pay the bills and take out the garbage, and reside and see our own and others' humanity and connection.
And I definitely want to explore that act of listening a little further in chapter 3. You go into that, and we'll get there. But before we explore and walk through what it means to truly listen, because as you were describing, it's so much at the core of this notion of compassion and accountability and having these conversations and how we're showing up for them. Let's talk about compassionate accountability as a concept. And we had Nate Regeer on the show several episodes ago. You know, he's written a book lately called Compassionate Accountability. And there's this, definitely this in the ether, this notion of accountability with heart, with soul, that is connected and meaningful. So what do you mean by compassionate accountability, and particularly this intersection of clarity with compassionate accountability?
I had a really nice meeting with Nate a few weeks ago, and it is kind of funny, the timing, right? That as we were both working on these books about compassionate accountability at the same time, and I haven't read his book yet, which I need to, but I suspect there's a lot of similar and very different ideas in there. In fact, I was working yesterday having a conversation with a CEO, and we were talking about accountability, and I kept coming back to the word alignment. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, as I say in the book, people often don't like accountability. We don't like, you know, it's kind of a funny word in that, especially, you know, what comes up is being held accountable or lack of accountability. It has a bit of a edge to it, a little bit of a harshness to it, which is unfortunate. But it's interesting, the word, much of accountability, I think, is alignment, right? Aligning around, what does success look like? I mean, just that, what does success look like? Even just asking that question is something that I find almost leaders can almost never do enough, right? What, like, are we aligned around what success looks like? And again, within that, it means, you know, am I aligned with my own values, my intentions, my actions, my words? Is there an alignment within me? And are we aligned? You know, are we working toward the same thing? Are we clear about what we're trying to accomplish, how we're trying to accomplish it? So that's all the accountability and alignment side. The compassionate piece is really, you know, again, what we were talking about earlier, it's bringing in the shared humanity, right? Bringing in that while we are trying to get stuff done in the business world, in the work world, we also need to hold each other with a kind of care and trust and I would say even love. The word compassion kind of includes that trust, care, love piece. And those can appear as in conflict with each other, and they sometimes are in certain ways, especially when there's conflict, when things are rough. How do we work toward that kind of alignment and at the same time keep that care, trust, and compassion piece? And I think this is one of the really beautiful things about how we can grow and learn as business people and as leaders, to be able to hold those two practices really well at the same time. Yeah. The leader I was talking to yesterday mentioned that there were going to be some changes on his team, that there were, you know, he had really, really probably had been too much on the compassion side with taking care of people. Mm-hmm. And not holding, there has been a lack of alignment for a long time with some people on his team. And there were going to need to be some really difficult conversations and probably some changes. And that for me, you know, I've been through that quite a bit as a leader, like working toward alignment. And it's a great practice.
And so much of this, as you're talking, this alignment and compassion and love, it's this notion that these are at different sides of the same coin. It's the same thing. And so often we try to divorce them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even again, in these conversations, you know, even in letting someone go, to do that with great compassion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, making those hard decisions, you know, pivoting from one strategy to another where there's how taking in somehow aligning or, you know, one's strategy, but also aligning on the heart work as well, which takes some real skill.
Absolutely. I have believed for many, many years, and I tried to practice this myself in my leadership roles, that yes, there are, you know, maybe economic types of places where you're reducing workforce size or things like that, that are not about performance or anything. But when you do have a situation where there's, let's say we need to have those tough conversations or help someone move along in their life or career, like that can be and should be an act of love and compassion, true compassion for that individual.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also a, you know, such a obvious, important thing when bringing people in, right? Aligning around what kind of culture do we want to create? You know, what does success look like here?
Yeah, absolutely.
In this workplace. And yeah, and having those conversations and and it brings in all kinds of, you know, we were talking yesterday about psychological safety came up, like, and it's hard to align when people don't feel safe. So creating environments, because if you don't feel safe, there's a way of holding back and not expressing what you feel and think, or you're especially bringing in, you know, those doubts and conflicts get hidden, and things that are hidden like that tend to grow. So part of creating cultures and relationships where there can be more safety and vulnerability. Again, it's part of the definition of clarity.
Yeah, they really do. They integrate so well. We're talking with Mark Lesser. The book is Finding Clarity: How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. And, you know, Mark, as we're talking about, I have been a believer, a teacher, a practitioner of clarity, and paired with and as aspect of it, of compassionate, caring, accountability for many, many years, decades even. And what I want to say for listeners and want to ask you for your insights is that despite that commitment to it, total belief in it, as a human being, I still find those moments where it is challenging for me in my own frustrations, what have you, my story, everything going on. Showing up to listen requires curiosity, requires me to get out of my own way. And sometimes that's really flipping hard to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, as you have pursued this practice for yourself and you help other leaders with it, what are some of the ways that you would recommend to listeners or to me to help us when we're in those moments to get to this place that you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, I do think of two things. One is the first chapter of my book is Be Curious, Not Furious. And then the other is around, becoming more, seeing the world through story, and especially our own stories. And a great, you know, not the practice of not avoiding conflict and having a toolbox and presence for skillfully working with when we're not in alignment. Being able to start a conversation with something like, you know, the story that I'm telling myself is the fact that you were late in providing me with this report, means that you're not so engaged in the work, and I feel disrespected, and my request is that, you know, that you that we align more, and if there's a problem with timing, that you let me know. But there's something about starting that conversation with the story that I'm telling myself. Now, this isn't, you know, sometimes this isn't the path for all difficult conversations, but it is a good strategy to have to be able to stay out. I mean, I think part of the issue here is that, you know, we humans are wired to stay safe and stay alive. And one of the things that happens is we go right to blame and self-protection without even being consciously aware of it. So that's part of this practice, is it's an awareness practice, and it's awareness of how going to blame. That an antidote to that is to see through the world of story and to be curious about other people's stories and our own stories, right?
So even if we're not starting the conversation with, hey, this is what happened, this is my story of what happened, we should be having a conversation with ourselves so that we're aware and have clarity, if I use that word, about what our own story is, so that we can then make some choices about how we show up and what tools we're bringing to the conversation.
Yeah, and how our stories and our feelings and our own identity issues all kind of play as a leader, and to be able to not be unconsciously leaving, you know, emotional wakes as leaders, which and we sometimes can't help but leave those emotional wakes, but then to recognize it and be good at, you know, cleaning them up and acknowledging, oh, I may have overreacted there, or oh, I may have underreacted there. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the themes that you open with, I think I'm still in the introduction here, if I'm remembering correctly, is that avoidance of conflict and all the problems that it creates. And that a problem of avoidance is huge. And in some respects, I think it's also why in many businesses, in many companies, you end up with some of those cliche, like abusive leaders in certain roles, is because they don't avoid the conflict necessarily. They're avoiding something, but the way they show up for the conflict is, you know, with a lot of heat and energy and all the rest, and leaving that wake. What is it that when we start to sense ourselves avoiding something, going, okay, gosh, that's uncomfortable, I'm not. How do you recommend that we start to choose a different path? Go into avoidance.
Well, you know, the only times I've ever gotten into trouble in the business world was from avoiding conflict. And I'll even share that I think I might share this in my book. I was let go by the board of the company that I started. Mm. And it was clearly from, there were some, there are many, many issues that I was turning away from. And I made a vow that I was not going to avoid conflict in my next leadership role. Now, that vow doesn't mean that I've, you know, had to jump in and work with every time there was a conflict, but it meant to be aware and make to be much more aware and make decisions. Is this something? Okay, and it's interesting. I think so much of it starts with just feeling it, right? There's a disconnect here. We're not in alignment here, or he did what, or she said what, like, and so there's often just a little pinch of an ouch, or, and to pay attention to that, like, huh, there's something, this was, I wonder how that little, that feeling, that ouch, turns into story, and often will turn right into action if we're not careful. So it starts, I think, with awareness of what we're feeling and those conflicts, and then having, you know, it takes ongoing skill and trust and presence to then work skillfully with them. To have those difficult conversations. One of the things I often have what I call the no festering rule in work, right?
That, I love that.
Yeah, that you know, there is something that's an ouch or a surprise, and like my tendency might be to, oh, like, man, I don't want to go. It feels, anything that feels dangerous it's like, oh, that's a place that needs some attention and exploration. Yeah. You know, can we talk about it? How are we doing? I felt not seen or pushed aside there in the story I'm telling myself or whatever that is. So I had a Google scientist friend who often said, we are descendants of the nervous apes, we humans, we're really good at scanning for threats. And we are, and scanning externally and internally, right? We all have that inner scanner, that inner judge going. And again, it's being at work in leadership, it's great. It's a great cauldron for getting to know ourselves and building those more healthy ways of not overreacting or underreacting.
And it truly is a to become skillful always requires practice. And this is a practice of doing this work. One of the metaphors that you use throughout the book you introduce in chapter one is Homer, Buddha, and Alice in Wonderland. And I thought this was a fun three characters that most people know in some, even tangentially, at least a little bit. And these different aspects of how we show up in our, the consciousness that we're bringing. And so can you walk us through Homer, Buddha, and Alice in Wonderland and how we can become aware and use those, be aware of those concepts to help us with compassion and accountability?
I have to say, this is one of the, things that I love about the process of writing, in that it totally surprised me. And I think it started with, my own struggles in writing and work and relationships. And I found myself mirroring one of my favorite lines about Homer Simpson, when he says, "Why does everything have to be so hard?" And to me, that expression points to my own, inner victim, or the part of me that feels why is everything so hard? And as I was writing those lines and feeling my own inner Homer Simpson, I thought, oh, the historical Buddha had a lot to say about why everything is so hard. It's like, yes, everything is hard, and our job as humans is to not shy away from the difficulties, anxieties, the suffering of the world, but to learn how to transform that into freedom, into possibility, even into satisfaction and happiness. This is the kind of core, Buddhist philosophy, is transforming challenges and difficulty into more satisfaction and equanimity and possibility. And then Alice in Wonderland showed up, like, well, how do you do that? What's the core practice? And it's like, and she says, curiouser and curiouser. And it's like, oh, okay. This is the response to Homer, Buddha, and now there's Alice. Just keep coming back to practicing curiosity and seeing the world through fresh, open, practicing. She's a great example of beginner's mind, or not making assumptions, not being caught by our assumptions. And yeah, so it was fun that those characters played an ongoing role throughout the book.
All right. Homer, Buddha, and Alice in Wonderland. So we're going to take we're going to dive deeper down, if I go with the rabbit hole here, because we're talking about Alice, right? So we're talking with Mark Lesser. The book is Finding Clarity: How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. And I want to call back to something that you said a moment ago, and with these characters, and then with listening and bringing all of this together in one big question. So go with me for just a moment here. So you mentioned earlier about our desire for safety, and in the book you talk about how that can interfere with clarity. So I actually want to read from the book here for just a second. You said, "The tendency of scanning for threats leads to a strong inner critic." I know that one. We're often scanning for threats internally, asking, am I safe? Am I okay? What did I do wrong? What might go wrong? And again, like you said, this is an effective strategy for staying safe and staying alive, but not so good for seeing our world with more clarity. So then we go into conversations, accountability conversations, or conversations where we're feeling out of alignment. Mm-hmm. And you call, well, you talk about becoming comfortable with discomfort. Mm-hmm. When I think of Alice in Wonderland, horribly uncomfortable. Even as a child, I was like, oh, this crazy world she's entered. And that scanning for safety in this world that with everything's unknown and you've got crazy cats and threats everywhere. And I don't know if I'm going to grow or shrink or what's going to happen. There's a particular approach to how we show, and for leaders, you know, dealing with, you know, we hear this become comfortable with discomfort in conversations around diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and mm-hmm. And creating a more inclusive workplace. And just so many aspects of this vitally important ability to become comfortable with discomfort. Mm-hmm. It is such a critical skill. And you talk about it in some ways that I think are really important and unique. So I want to put that on the table. I know that's a long preamble to the question, but Mark, as you think about becoming comfortable with discomfort and dealing with this human tendency we have to scan for safety, and yet this is where we live, how do we show up? What do we do? Practically, how do we start to manifest some of that?
One of the chapters is called Mind the Gaps. And so there's one way to respond to that question is that in as a leader and in business, there's always going to be gaps between what is and what I'm trying to accomplish, what my financial goals are, my leadership goals, maybe even my goals around my own well-being. So it's interesting to not shy away from seeing those gaps between what actually is now and what we're trying to accomplish. And there's some discomfort in staying even with those. So I'm kind of taking on what I think of the very sort of practical nuts and bolts business leadership gaps, which is actually kind of a good place to start, right? So like, it's good to start with, so this practice of becoming more comfortable with discomfort, start in ways that are relatively easy. You were taking on the harder ones of the, whoa, like, what is this, you know, what is there to hold on to? And I think, you know, I'll admit my own strong bias that I have toward the importance of having a meditation practice. And I think more and more we're seeing meditation and mindfulness being taught in MBA programs and leadership programs. And I think it's helpful to have a practice where we can step out of the stream of the busyness, the challenges, all of the noise of our everyday world, and practice with feeling, you know, finding a sense of comfort right in the midst of the discomfort, right? So our, you know, we can't stop our thinking, right? And we need to, like, how can we become comfortable in letting go of any idea that we're going to stop our thinking or the stream of our consciousness? So with training ourselves that with every exhale, a sense of letting go and feeling a sense of safety, right? Feeling, what does it feel like to be safe and satisfied and connected? Training ourselves to feel those are such three, I think, important qualities: safety, safety, satisfaction, and connection. And and to be cultivating that in ourselves and in our relationships and in our and again, it means noticing when we don't feel safe. It means noticing when we don't feel satisfied. It means noticing when we don't feel connected. But this is our practice. This is our aspiration. And I think it's helpful.
Can we pause there for just a second, Mark? Because we so often talk about the first person you have to lead is yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is such a a practical way of what that looks like. And what you're talking about is cultivating those three attributes for ourselves before we can show up and deal with all of the world the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting if you notice, anytime I'm with a leader or walk into a business, I'm wondering, does this person, how safe, satisfied, and connected is this person? And it's interesting, all three of those qualities, safety means, becoming comfortable in your own skin, right? Becoming more and more comfortable with yourself. Satisfaction is a super interesting one in the business world. When people hear that, they're like, oh no, if I'm satisfied, then how am I going to get stuff done? How am I going to, no, it's like, it's this sense of, you don't want to, as a leader, lead with frustration and anxiety. It just does not work well. You want to lead with, a sense of, again, this is, can I be satisfied and have strong goals and aspirations? I can be satisfied and work with a sense of urgency. And also just connection, right? Building, on many, many levels, right? Being connected with our common humanity, wanting the best for the people that I work with, being generous, being wholehearted. Again, so these are all, I think, essential and powerful, leadership practices and just human practices.
Human practices. And you asked me earlier, what was it I loved about the introduction? Well, there's so much rich content, but one of the messages that comes through loud and clear is that this work that we're talking about doing, it really is, it's becoming the fullest version of ourselves as a human being and that actualization and all of it. And it's, for those who choose leadership, it's a path that provides those opportunities for us, mm-hmm. if we'll take them. Yeah.
And we're all leaders, right? I mean, of course, there's the particular roles that we have, but whether we're on a team or in our, we all have to lead our own lives. We're all influencers.
Absolutely. All right, so much more to get into here, Mark. Before we go any farther, though, I want to make sure that let listeners know where to connect with you again. Mark Lesser, Lesser, and the book is Finding Clarity, How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. So, Mark, listeners are listening and going, okay, yes, I need more. Where do we connect with you? Find out more about the book. Where should we go?
Yeah, my website, marklesser.net, marklesser.net. There's lots of my writing, some meditations. I have a Zen Bones podcast that I've been doing. That's the place where to go.
Fantastic. All right. I hope that you will take advantage of this, and you definitely want to pick up this book. And this is one you're not going to just read through in an airplane ride. You're going to have to sit and really digest and reflect and think and apply, most importantly, these principles. So we've been talking about leading yourself and how you get comfortable showing up in areas of discomfort as a leader, as a human being. And that starts by leading yourself and cultivating safety, satisfaction, and connectedness. So one of the elements in this aspect of the stretch zone and becoming comfortable with discomfort that you talk about is identifying some of our mistaken beliefs. And I thought this was so powerful. It reminded me, I had a bumper sticker many, many years ago. It said, don't believe everything you think. And I'm sure it came out of something somewhere in the past, but this core competency of being able to know your mistaken beliefs and what's driving you as a leader, mm-hmm. to be able to identify them and make some different choices. But you actually talk about one of yours around your need for comfort that I thought was really powerful. So can you talk with us about some of the mistaken beliefs that drive us and what we do with those?
Yeah. Well, I give attribution that I borrowed these from the Enneagram. I don't know if, some people may or may not be familiar with it's a personality system.
had an episode on the Enneagram with a pro Enneagram person just, I don't know, 4, 5, or 7 episodes back. So listeners can go back and check that out.
What's interesting about the system is that it starts with that we all somehow have a core mistaken belief that forms in us when we're really, really young, and that our personalities and the way that we process information comes out of those mistaken beliefs. And again, you know, we all, not only do we, are we wired to stay alive, we also are wired to be loved, right? That we want to be, we want to be loved and accepted. And we all, you know, develop certain beliefs that are quite deep within us. And I say for me, my own need for comfort and to avoid stress was one of the ways that I noticed I was easily not working skillfully with conflict, and that I needed to see that belief. But people might have, you know, the belief that you're judged by what you accomplish and not who you are, or the belief that you, you know, that the world is unjust and you need to be the person who makes things right. And we all, you know, it's interesting, on a broad way, but also I think in a more, more particular way of, within relationships, in conversation, being, again, it's a lot like coming back to being curious about our own thinking, being curious about our stories, which our stories and what we value and believe, and to be open and curious about ourselves and what other people are. You know, I often think we make the mistake of thinking that we're so different. I think that it's almost as though we all live on our own planet. And the problem we have is that we assume everyone lives on our planet. And if they don't, we want to bring them over to live on our planet. It doesn't go so well. We have to be willing to notice how other people think and process information.
Absolutely. So let's bring all of this home to an accountability conversation. So I was just, as you were yesterday, I was talking with a leader who was sharing some of her managers are very people focused, very, as you said, maybe have on the continuum of, are investing so much in the care of their people that they're lacking in some of the compassionate accountability aspects of things. So we're going into this conversation. We've been doing a lot of work just walking through our conversation so far with self-awareness, what we're doing, identifying our own stories, our own beliefs, and making conscious decisions about those so that we can show up with genuine curiosity, truly listen, as you're mentioning earlier. And I know somebody's listening now going, okay, yeah, but I got to get this work done and it's not happening. And so we're okay, now I'm coming to this conversation and I want to genuinely listen. I know I need to show up with curiosity, but doggone it, I got to get this work done. Mm-hmm. So walk us through how we synthesize all this in the moment where we're actually asking the question, hey, this didn't happen. We're out of alignment here. I'm noticing this and what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's the, there's a few different models for how to have these. These are what I think of as alignment conversations or genuine conversations. And yeah, so if you're, especially if you're in the role of a leader, right? And there's something you have a need, you have an expectation. So I think it starts by saying what you observe, right? These tasks, these projects, they're not being done the way that I thought we agreed they were going to get done. And just starting out with the content, the storyline. And then being curious about, you know, even from there, did this other person have a different story, a different understanding? So starting with, aligning around stories. But then beyond that, there's often feelings involved. There may be, and then ultimately, I think there's going to be, we need to align. I have a request. My request is that here's what I would like to see happen. It looks like this. It feels like this by this date. What's needed? What support? What resources do you need in order to accomplish that? And again, these are the ongoing conversations that are having in workplaces all over the world. These alignment, but there are what I think of as very healthy conversations. But it requires, I think, these underlying practices around safety, satisfaction, and connection. It's hard to, those conversations are not going to go so well if you don't feel safe, right? If you're like, does this person really care about me? Are they really listening? Where it gets really hard is, I just don't have the resources to do this. I thought you were going to hire more people. I thought you were, as like, oh, okay, we need to have, how do we get things done in a world where where we have differing stories, where there are tensions around money, resources, measurements. We've got to find a way to get aligned here, even when there's some pretty big gaps.
And moving forward to the end of those conversations where we can't reach alignment, mm-hmm. What does that look like from your perspective? In the workplace, in the business world, certainly it happens. You've experienced it. We've all experienced it. How do we transition? How do we work through that gracefully and with compassion?
Yeah, it's very contextual, obviously. I think sometimes it's about being willing to be uncomfortable, even when there's a lack of alignment. Sometimes we have to try things. I mean, I even think of, when I was CEO of my last company, I had a product development team that scheduled long stretches of time for developing a product that we were working on. And my first reaction was, we can't spend all that time. Like, we can't do that. We have too many other things. And the woman who was the head of that project said, trust me on this, it will, we need, in order to develop the kind of program and product that we're trying to, we need to lock ourselves in a room for those, those 3 days or those 4 days. And she was, and I had my own story, my own resistance, but I trusted her, and she was absolutely right. And that I had to let go of, as the CEO, I had to let go of my idea and trust and saw, like, wow, yes, this needed that time. That was an example of, so sometimes as leaders, it's deciding, when do I need to stay with what I think is the right way? And when do I trust, someone who I've brought in as another leader? And there's no right answer there. We have to look at the various stories and make decisions and see what happens.
And that's where it comes full circle back to the intersection of clarity, because the reason you could trust her when she says, trust me, is because from the context of the conversation, you had both taken the time to establish the clarity about what success looked like, and you were working from the same end goal.
That's right. I knew, like, yes, this was, we needed to develop this product, and Yeah. And then there's the time and resources, you know, and you make those decisions and you try things and you learn and you see what happens.
All right. We've been talking with Mark Lesser. The book is Finding Clarity: How Compassionate Accountability Builds Vibrant Relationships, Thriving Workplaces, and Meaningful Lives. And Mark, we are sadly out of time. I could continue this discussion for many more hours, and I know it would be valuable, but you have put it in a book for all of us. And so I so encourage everyone to go and get a copy of Finding Clarity and know that you're going to benefit from it. And I just want to share as we wrap up a final quote, not the final quote in the book, but from early in the book, but I just loved this. So I want to close with this. Mark, you say, a good dose of awe and wonder combined with a growth mindset and the courage to explore may be our most important tools when it comes to all of this.
Thank you very much, David. It's really been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking, and I so appreciate all of your wisdom. So listeners, looking for a place to start? Mark has given us the roadmap. Start with yourself, cultivating your own safety, satisfaction, and connectedness. And be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
The UPS Store is making packing and shipping Easter gifts quicker than ever this year with UPS Air. How quick? Quicker than a walk around the park. Quicker than eating all the Easter candies. Quicker than finding a golden egg that you know is stuffed with cash. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back. Guaranteed at no extra cost. Exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send Easter joy on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.